and welcome to Game Brain, a board game podcast about our gaming group. I am your host, the enthusiastic gamer, and I'm going to bring a lot of enthusiasm today. Matthew Robinson joining me. I mean, we got the four horsemen, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow. The end is here.
We've got all four hosts today with me.
Woo!
Let's go around the horn. I got Tom Donnelly.
Woo!
I got Trey Alsop.
Hello.
I got Ben Mandelker.
In honor of Paul.
This is it. A four host podcast. We had.
That's right.
I'm just going to say right now.
Four hosts, today, one cup.
And I'm including the birth of both my children and the day I was married. This is the best day of my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I'm also including your marriage and the birth of your children. Birth of my and children. I'm saying this is the best day of my life.
You have gamed so rarely this month. It's now we had a game day.
I've had one game in the last 4 weeks, and that was a game of Revive, a two-player game with Ben. It was absolutely lovely.
You were lying.
What else did I do?
We were over here, and we played Ready, Set, but you played Oak.
Oh, you're right. Well, that was 2 weeks ago. Okay, I've been gaming.
All right.
But I finished my deadlines. Oh. My life got a little less crazy.
Wonderful. Preach.
And I finally, and then the minute I finished my deadlines, as always happens, like high school, finals era, I got wildly sick the day I turned, like afterwards.
That's how it works.
That's how it works. Crazy
I have a deadline next weekend and I will also.
You're preparing to get
I'm already
sick.
Ready. I'm good.
Yeah. But also like, I feel like colds right now are like COVID, hold my beer. Like their colds have upped their game.
It reminds me of why people say bless you. Right? It's because it comes from an era where you start to feel sick and everyone's like, oh, we're never going to see you again.
Yeah.
God bless you. God bless and
take
protect
care.
You. It was wonderful knowing you because odds are
it
would
be
the end of it. The
colds are no joke right now.
Have been waiting and they're back. They are ready and they're ready to fuck shit up. And you know what? I don't like it one bit. I'm bracing for my first.
And you're sure it was a cold? Because I feel like I've encountered a lot of people who's like, oh man, do I have the worst flu? And I'm like, you have COVID.
Can I tell you something?
You just haven't tested positive.
I tested 5 times over 10 days.
Yeah.
I tested today. And I also got the, whatever the last shot was called.
Covalent.
I got the bivalent 3 weeks ago.
Can I tell you about getting the bivalent
thing?
I went to CVS to get the bivalent and I signed up and I was like, I'll do the bivalent vaccine and I'll get the flu vaccine. And they said, oh, sir, so your insurance is Kaiser. I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to get the flu vaccine. Ooh. I was like, really? Like,
what?
But they let me have the bivalent vaccine. I was like, you're not going to let me have the flu vaccine, but you'll give me the COVID one?
Because COVID is free for everybody in LA County.
Wow.
Yeah.
They'll bill your insurance at the same time. But
did you guys get them both? I got them both on the same day.
No, I did not.
I did not enjoy the next day.
No. I felt nothing.
Really?
Absolutely nothing.
I read something that says that the amount you feel it does actually have some effect on the efficaciousness of the vaccine.
Well, let me tell you something. I felt it the next morning, and the next morning, you may remember, I came right over here to join on the podcast about Sky Mines. So I weighed in with COVID, not flu vaccine, in my brain, talking about Sky
Mines.
And he
did it with a smile.
The people that were writing in about what was up with Ben, that's what it is.
Now, all of this is a long way of saying, I haven't gamed in a while. I've been sick. I had deadlines. They're over. And I said to my three fellow hosts, let's spend the whole day playing board games and then record a podcast afterwards. And that is just what we did, everybody.
Because
we haven't done it yet, but we're doing it.
We were going to record this morning. And then you said, well,
let's play games all day and then record.
Yeah. And some of us gamed last night.
Yes.
So it's been 24 hours. It's been our own Essen day.
You had a lot of Essen.
Our little BGG con.
Yeah.
So
The BGG con is happening right now. And we're basically having Essen day.
Yeah.
This is our BGG con.
What's for me? Certainly felt that way.
Feels like an essential day.
There were 3 game nights this week. Today's being one of them. Let's end with that. Let's start with on Tuesday. I was going to have a game night, but then I got sick. And so Ben took it over. Ben, what happened on Tuesday's game night?
Well, it's the first time I really have hosted like proper game night at my place where I put the leaves in the table and had 2 games going on at once. That was very exciting. The leaves in the table.
Dimitri almost broke a leaf.
Except for Dimitri leaning, putting all his body weight on the leaf and nearly cracking it off. But that's actually not his fault. That's more like the table's fault.
Well,
I think we could split the difference.
But we started. Well,
I'm thinking like how it happened. It's almost like a gymnast doing the vault.
He was
where
like
both palms are placed together, and then all of your weight is concentrated on the edge of the table.
He was about
to
ready
achieve
to get
maximum leverage.
He was about ready to get onto that pommel horse. He was like ready to swing that leg right on up. We're like, whoa, easy. That leave is sort of starting to sag. I was like, Anyway. We started off by playing Ready, Set, Bet, you know, because we had such a fun time playing it last week. And Tom...
The filler of the season.
What's a little bit of like a super filler?
Yeah.
And so, was that an and to the filler of the season? Or
Yeah, for me.
Yeah. Well, I can tell because you didn't want to play it today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you put a veto on that.
Oh, no, it was last night.
I didn't veto it, but I preferred not to.
He said it in a certain way.
That said, I almost ordered it to take it back for Thanksgiving.
There you go.
Ooh, but then okay. I realized I was going to be the one rolling the dice and doing the call, and I was...
Well, there's
I am not Tom or Ben.
So, Tom, first, you got to play it for the first time, and you were the announcer, and you lived up to all our hopes and expectations by bringing in... Big old timey energy.
Old timey voice for
the
all.
The accent was not offensive.
All four races.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Wait, for all four races.
You mean the four separate horse races?
Yes. Correct. The four horse races that were in the game, not the
four different racial accents.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yes.
I had ads for period.
Also, I'd like to know what Tom considers the four races.
That's race number 1, 2, 3, and 4.
I did all four races. Hold on, Tom.
Well, they pair up with the four genders.
Anywho, so you did four. There were four races in the game.
And
there
were sponsors. There were commercial breaks and ads. We had a little time for it.
No. Tom not only did the voices, but he queued up sound effects. He queued up the sound of people cheering on a horse race. So when he started, when he said, "And they're off," we also heard on his phone a YouTube video going,
the bell.
But I'm curious, Tom, what did you think about the game?
I thought it was really fun. I really liked it. I have a little bit of a soft spot for racing games and horse racing games in particular. Reiner Knizia did one called Winner's Circle. That is,
I remember that.
Very good. It's a very good game. It's more strategic in the sense that you are rolling the dice, but you're choosing which horse to move. So there's a lot of interesting strategy in it. But it's a good horse betting game, and it scratches a lot of the same itches. But the real-time intensity of Ready, Set, Bet was a delight, an absolute delight. Really, really fun. I'm looking forward to playing it as a better one of these days. I'm gonna get it.
I think the energy, the fact that you can't get a whole table of people cheering for these dice to roll, I think that is so fun. And the fact that Tom, you were like in the throes of it, you were in peak horse announcing, like, "Ah, no, horse number 7's coming up around the band," and we're all going, come on. And then my boyfriend Dominique walked in.
Oh my god,
during that,
like at the in the middle of the final race.
Yes,
everybody is like slapping down bets, and it could not be more bedlam.
Yeah, it could not be more like crazy, but also peak board game nerdy. Like, yes. Peak, like...
Did he just, like, walk in, turn around
and walk out?
We were not being cool. It was not a cool moment.
You know, sometimes I like to think, like, I'm not a nerd. I like board games, but I'm not a nerd. And that moment while we're all screaming at dice and yelling at tiny little, like, one-inch horses.
Yeah.
And then Dom walked in and just stared at us.
He stopped at the top of the stairs.
He looked at Ben and said, "Pack your shit." It was
like, what is happening in this household right now?
It was so funny. He was so sweet about it, too. He was like, no. He's like, "I get it. You guys have fun.
I think he would actually really like the game, because I think it's the sort of game that non-gamers would like.
That's what I was about to say. This is a good Thanksgiving game. This is a get the family together.
I'm bringing it back. Total non-gamers.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring it back to Thanksgiving.
Is it widely available right now?
Yeah, I just saw
it on Amazon.
I don't know if it's on Amazon, but I'm sure it's on all the game sites. And I just saw several of them in stock at Game Odyssey in Pasadena.
Well, my Thanksgiving dinner I cook, and Paul and Barry and my family all get together, and, you know, the extended family, and we will definitely be playing that.
I also think, by the way, I know not everyone in our audience drinks, but I do think for those who do enjoy drinking, it's a really fun game to drink with.
It was a whiskey night at Ben's house.
Yeah, it was whiskey night. So that was super fun. And then after we played that, we split into two games. There was Revive. So that was Tom, Elder, and Paul. And Elder is on a Revive binge at the moment.
He is the binge gamer. That's what he does, man. I don't think he's played it that many. I think he still has more times than he has. But
he's committed to the binge, though.
Yes.
He's binge ready.
Oh, yeah. He just wants to play Revive for the next month.
And we'll help him with that. Yeah, we'll talk about Revive.
That's going to be our feature game.
And then Trey and I played Oak with Dimitri.
Second time, Oaks hit the table.
Oak.
Is it time for Oak thoughts?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Oak.
Get into it.
You talk about it.
I'd say this is second time I probably liked it a little bit less. I think we were really conscious of how much like the potions matter for determining kind of like the character.
This just to refresh people if they missed, this is the new game from Game Brewer designed by Wim Goossens, or probably Vim Goossens. And it is a pretty classic worker placement game with some interesting variable setup and some specialized powers for your workers as the game goes on. That's the quick pitch.
Yeah, I still have, I would say, like a solid opinion of it where I would totally play it again. I don't think it's going in my top 50. I don't think I'm going to like seek it. Like, it's not occupying my thoughts where like I'm like just dying to continue to explore more of the space of the game.
Oak. I will say the night side of the board was very eye-catching.
It's beautiful.
We kept glancing over as we were playing Revive, which itself it has a very, you know, a board that draws the eye. Mm-hmm. But I was looking over at that board and I was like, wow, that is kind of gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's beautiful art. I didn't even know there was a day side.
But what did you think, Ben? This is the first time you played it, right?
I thought it was fine. I was not won over by it. I had a pleasant enough time with it. To me, it felt like a right down the middle fine game. I think there's cool stuff.
Bog standard, solid, good game, but not...
Yeah, like it was, didn't capture my imagination. There were some interesting things it was playing around with, sort of like taking the idea of worker placement and kind of, you know, changing what it means, like what a space means, you know, how it can change for different people depending on how they upgrade cards, like card play and worker placement, you know.
What? You've played it, Matt, right?
Yeah, I played it with...
Taught me, and...
I've only played it once.
Like, one thing that it's weird about this that kind of goes against the worker placement general feeling I have for worker placement games is, like, there's 5 rounds in that game. And the first round feels super tight and it feels much more like a worker placement game because there's like a limited number of things you do. And like your third time trying to place a druid to like one of the action spaces, you feel like, oh, no, this is completely not ideal at all. And then like the game always just loosens up and it almost like loses its worker placement component.
Have you played Everdell?
No, I haven't.
It has a very similar narrative flow to Everdell in that sense. That's where the comparison ends. But it does. Everdell has that thing where it's like, wait a minute, that's it. That's the whole round. That's all I can do. By the end, you're like, oh, I can do anything I want.
And I'm not sure that's a good thing. Like, I think part of like being a worker placement game is that I can't do everything that I want, and I'm kind of competing with other people. And like, kind of like you, I relate everything to Agricola.
Of course.
Anyway, so much of the game in there is like, okay, I need to reno. Who else needs to reno? And I'm looking at. In this game, it doesn't work that way because you have cards that you play. And so the same action space, if someone has different cards, means different things to them. So I'm not looking and saying, I'm not often looking at someone else's board and worried about that space disappearing.
Right.
Especially because like in the game, you kind of have a lot of cheats around that anyway. So it almost like it loses its worker placementness as the game progresses.
In the beginning, there were definitely those moments where I was like, okay, I think I'll do this. And then I'm like, wait, Dimitri went there, like why the hell did Dimitri do that, like where did that come from? Or like, oh, Trey, you're there. And so like, you know, that you have those fun moments, that's the fun part.
And I kept on placing my druids in the wrong place too, so I was driving you crazy.
But towards the end it sort of started to loosen up, and I'm not opposed to that. Like, you know, we've talked a lot about the Transcontinental, and like, you know, I think the Transcontinental is fantastic, and one of the reasons why the Transcontinental I think is so great is one of the cool things about that design is in the beginning of the game it feels like there's not enough spots. And so you feel like it's a knife fight to get the actions up for that worker placement. But as the game progresses, it expands, like you're saying, Trey, but it expands so vastly, it then becomes less about like, how can I make sure I get a spot where I need to get a spot? And then more, it goes into that space of, I only have 3 tokens to place out there. How can I do all the things I want to do?
Which is the constraint. That's what keeps it from feeling large. When we were talking with Elder about Space Station Phoenix and about these games like that and Bloody Inn, where you're cannibalizing your own engine and you're actually reducing your ability to do things over the course of the game, and that being a very interesting dynamic, it does take care of that. Like, there are engine builders where the engine gets too big and all tension leaves the game. I think that's what we're talking about, right? And I don't like that. As for some people, they love that because, oh, I could do anything now. And I'm like, yeah, that letting air out of a balloon for me.
That's why I like Terraforming Mars. Sorry to...
Yeah, I'm surprised people have moved away from more restrictive worker placement. It seems like every worker placement game that comes out now, you can always go wherever you want. It just at worst costs a lot. And I'm surprised we don't see more games that are like, no, that spot's gone. Sorry, you better have a backup plan. And I'm always more excited by that.
Yeah.
That to me is like real. Like that. That feels like that. That's
it's inherently tension. More interactive.
Right.
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 But
to be fair, though, Oak, I feel like, does it because it's so overpriced to go where somebody is almost like it is. You're not going there unless it was a massive emergency or something. But it almost feels like it might as well be no.
Both times I've played Oak, I think I've gone into the final round knowing all the things that I wanted to do.
No one could stop you.
And I could do it.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that feels like something that's not great. And Transcontinental, what you're speaking to, Ben, I think does something similar to Agricola, which is like where the battle is fought just tends to shift over the course of the game. At the beginning, we're fighting over kind of a limited space. When we get near the end of the game, other action spaces have emerged, which are frankly just a lot better. And we're still competing over them.
And many of them only a certain people can go to even. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
How often you play Transcontinental and you're frustrated by somebody places right where you want to go, right in front of you.
Everybody.
Like that's a good sign of a good worker placement game, right?
I think Underwater Cities does worker placement exceptionally well. Yeah, and I think Barrage. But no, with Oak, though.
There was a game we just played today that we'll talk about very soon that does that to maybe too much of a degree. We're going to find out.
In terms of other things about Oak, though, like regardless of the worker placement, I just wasn't totally won over by everything else in the game. You know, our game was very tree centric because there's basically like a tree of tracks.
The potion, the three potions that came out, Matt, were giving rewards on the tree.
Ooh.
And so it was pushing everybody kind of up the tree.
Oh, that's,
so
that's
two out of the three.
Yeah. And so like,
that's maybe not a great setup for a first game.
It didn't open up the way our game you taught me.
And you know, when you talked about Oak, you talked about, oh, there's a game where you can accessorize your meeples, which I could do. I did do. It was very fun to put a little man purse on or lady purse on my druid. But I often found that as by accessorizing them, you get these cool powers. And I was like, ooh, this is so cool. But when it came time to actually employ
advantage of them,
I found that I really was only using one of their powers. And I just felt like there were some cool ideas, but the execution just didn't quite land for me. Like, it was fine. I would play it, but there are a lot of other games I would want to play again.
We're in a tough season because we're getting a lot of really good games. So it's a tough beauty contest to be in now.
I think some people would really, really enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah. Cool. Should we move on to Friday's game?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Friday's game night, we had 8 people. We began with the game that shall not be named, and went quite well. It's fun playing with people that don't play the game a lot because
talking about Avalon
things
you can say the word.
Can I? I don't know. I don't want to offend. We're at your house, Matt, and I don't want to offend you. It was Ben and Matt Ben and Trey and I were on the same team.
Yeah,
and I mean, just masterclass, really. Right, crushed it.
Oh, you know, it's amazing how well people can do when they actually just listen to me for once instead of suspecting the worst out of me.
Correct. Ben was trusted earlier in this game than he has ever been trusted before. I think second round we started trusting him, which was great.
To great success.
Yeah, we had Cal Mann, friend of the podcast, friend from Canada. I have to say that now every time because why does David is the only one who gets to get friend of the podcast and friend? Cal used to live down here with us, but he's a Canuck and he now lives in Vancouver and at least once or twice a year comes down for some game and it's always a pleasure to play with him. And then after Avalon, we broke into two games. We played Revive and we played Autobahn.
Yes. So I talked about Autobahn last week. It's something I am excited about.
I really still want to play it.
How did this play go in comparison to other plays?
The first time we played, we only got through the first two eras.
Correct.
This time we got through, we got through the third era sort of is very asterisky because...
One player,
Paul. Paul surprised us at game night. Paul wasn't supposed to be at game night, but he showed up right when the rules were done.
I needed to teach.
Yeah, I needed to teach you. It took me a little bit longer than I was expecting. And
sorry.
No, it wasn't your fault. There was a lot of chaos in the room.
It was loud.
The other table was very loud.
The other table kept turning the music back up.
I don't know who it was, but somebody was just being flat out rude.
Yeah. Okay. So just when the rules were done, Paul walked in and said, "Hey, Paul, you want to be the fourth?" So he said, "I'll be the fourth, but just know I have to go at midnight because I'm seeing a midnight showing, like a 12:15 showing of Black Panther, Wakanda Forever."
Right.
So we're like, okay, we'll do this. So the last era, Paul had to leave midway through the last era. We went like very quickly.
So his last few turns weren't that good.
Everything was crazy. But
did his game kind of fall apart at that point?
his game fell apart once he left.
All of our game. We were all rushing at that point.
Can I ask a question? In a game with four people who know how to play, how long does it take?
Three hours.
Started playing. Paul showed up at 10 o'clock. And so
we kind of played in
probably two and a half hours.
Under two and a half.
Yeah.
Did not feel overly long.
Okay. I think it's a little longer than 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I think it's 3 hours.
It was
yeah.
the teach three that hours. That was yeah, the thing so. That actually made it.
The teachers
feel it seems bloated. Like you guys have never finished a game.
We did.
Oh, you did. Okay, but
well, we did. But it wasn't.
But
like,
we had to auto play Paul's turns
it wasn't
once he
like
left.
A real final thing. But either way,
it was over by that point anyway.
Yeah, but it was really cool to see honest. That third act of the game was fascinating because things really. They really ramp up very quickly, and lots of crazy things happen. But I personally am really
you thought excited. It. You thought it was. That's what you said last week when you said you thought yeah, that it, that did. Once East Germany opens up,
it really does open up, and the game kind of kicks into real high gear, which was cool. But I'm really excited to hear more about what Trey thought because it was your first time playing it.
Oh, I love it.
Can you give us just a little?
Okay, so in Autobahn, we are kind of like competing companies that are contributing to the. Building of the Autobahn, and the game is the
2022 game designed mm-hmm. by Fabio Lopiano yep. and Nestor Mangone from Alley Cat Games.
And kind of what's great about this game is that there are three eras that we're going to play. So essentially like post-World War II, kind of like Cold War era, and then modern. And you actually are building out the German Autobahn, and you're both building it out and upgrading it, and everyone's contributing and using it because we're doing deliveries.
Is it just their freeway system? What is the Autobahn?
It is is what we would call interstates, but that's a different.
Right, they don't have states, right? But yeah, okay.
And it does exactly what it says. Like it's got a tremendous amount of depth for the ways that you can contribute. You're not just building the road and upgrading the road and adding gas stations to it. It's like as you contribute to it, you're kind of it's almost like buying stock in a certain line, which is that you've got your representatives that go on the board mm-hmm. of these various, you know, interlacing routes type of thing, which can kind of score and give you powers type of thing. But it models like construction of a national project over time,
which is what everybody wants in their board game. Doesn't everyone want to spend their free time modeling construction?
That's great. I think I need
I'm ordering it tomorrow.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you play it?
No.
Oh, you're just going blind, huh?
I was watching them play. I was watching what they were doing. It was a game that frustrated Dimitri greatly, and Trey was super excited about. I think Dimitri actually improved his rating. He enjoyed it. He said it was an 8, didn't he?
Yeah, he said originally he was like, I think it's going to be a 7. And then he went up to an 8. Although he may have sort of pulled back. I couldn't quite tell where he landed with it. But I think that overall he had more positive experience. Partially, one thing that Paul, Dimitri, and I all agreed on, because we played that initial aborted game, was playing in your office, Tom, there was a lot more light. And the thing is, the game, everything is just like a little small, and just having just a little bit more light on it, you're sort of able to kind of like see it and take it in, which somehow actually makes it easier to play.
There's a lot of small print on the cards, and I don't think it is not okay.
But the truth is there is. And I also think, by the way, at four players, the game really sings. I mean, I've played it at all player counts now. I think it's been really fun at all player counts. But with four players, that competition is on, and there's these, you know, you're building these highways. You've got trucks that are going up and down them, which is actually just like fun to move trucks around on a highway. But also, by the way, this game is at heart a hand management game. You are playing cards, and you have to time your cards. You have to there's all sorts of stuff with like what action slot can you play a card to? What color is that card? You know, like if you have one orange card, so if you use that orange card to build an orange highway, you'll have to wait a while before you can access that orange card again to maybe put down an orange gas station or something like that. So I was really excited, Trey, that you liked it so much.
Yeah, it makes it kind of like hard to just focus on just like one or two lines. You end up kind of having to spread a lot of your efforts around, but there's kind of clever ways that you're like, I'm going to use my off colors to do different things. This game does a thing which I think, like, if I'm envisioning my like favorite kind of board game, generally, like, there is some kind of map that we're all playing towards. And so, like, when people make a change to the map, that affects the game state immediately. And like, there's always like new opportunities opening up by what other people are doing, but you're also like racing. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a decent sense of like anticipating what the person in front of you, back of you might do. And you're like, oh, I'm hoping that gas station just opened up. Am I going to be able to get, no, Dimitri's going to grab that, you know, those type of things. But it's like, it's the anti Faem. Like, remember I criticized Faem for being like, it's got all this board presence, but none of it really means anything. I feel like what Autobahn
Faem. Yeah, I don't Faem know. I don't agree. Kind of is that Friedman Friesa?
Yeah, I mean, there's, it means a little bit, but mostly it's just like it's triggering the stuff off of your cards rather than, oh, you really got blocked there, or what someone else did create a little bit of opportunity. This is very much like what the board situation is matters. With every decision that you make,
it creates a narrative on the board because
you're not just playing your own thing.
Because, for instance, in this game, you and Paul were both motivated to build out a white highway. Like, there's a white highway, and that therefore made that highway.
I'm not going to say anything.
Don't say anything.
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah,
I'm not saying a word.
That highway in Germany. That highway in Germany
runs east-west.
It runs east-west, and as a result of you guys both building it out,
we kind of had an implicit partnership.
There was a lot of, the more you guys built it out, then Dimitri comes in and drops a gas station on there, and that becomes the focus of attention on the game. And I built stuff on what was supposed to be the main thoroughfare, and no one was using the main thoroughfare because theirs was so used up. So trucks go faster on their highway. There's more opportunities, and that was so fascinating to see how other players' actions really impact sort of the life of this game, like the little truck driving world that's happening on here. So
you were kind of like had to go it alone on your route for much of the game.
That was my mistake.
And that's a problem. This game has the thing that we like about Panamax.
Okay.
Where you can't really do things completely on your own. Part of what you're doing
you
is playing in such a way that other people's actions benefit you as well.
And
I love that.
Yeah, and I didn't really take that into consideration in the beginning. I didn't say, hey, how can I piggyback on what Trey and Paul are doing? I was like, let me start building out my own little tendril of a highway. And then I realized, oh, I gotta change this all up. But there's some inelegant.
That was
edges.
Still interesting, though. That was it interesting was. How you had to be like, I can't do this alone, so I've got to like base my route on the spine that has already been built in the South.
And I was like, what can I do to incentivize people to come up this way? There's nothing I can do. It wasn't about making people come up this way. It was about me going to where the people were, aka you guys. There's some inelegant elements of the game. There's a lot of little components, whatever. But honestly,
what do you think is inelegant? Well, identify what you.
Well, sir.
No. I'm curious.
But some of the things we talked about right at the... remember when we were walking out last night? We talked about a few things. I think it's a little... still think it's a little weird how a lot of meeples like gather in the lobby of this one area. There was something that... I forget.
I appreciate that more once things. I understood that every meeple gets 2 points that's there at the end.
There are a few little things here and there. There's like, you know, it was the fiddly... there's increasing fiddliness that happens in the game.
Well, a lot of the game, otherwise. I feel like every single game we played in the last 24 hours, the scope of your turn expanded. Like, as you reach the end of the game, everybody's turns get longer because they're more complex, and you have, like, you're chaining more and more and more things, and that's kind of good and bad a lot of times. But I'm eager to play this game again.
Same.
It may be my game of the year.
So far.
Really?
So far, yes.
That makes me,
so
I
far.
Feel, I'm, I always
like I said,
feel so... Like, this happened with the Transcontinental.
Mm-hmm.
When I was like, Trey, let's try the Transcontinental. And you said the same thing. And I
got him 2 years in a row.
Oh, I was like, I'm like, right? I feel like bringing a game to Trey and he says this may be your game of the year. Gets maybe. Me
it happened.
So
it happened again with Twilight Imperium. I mean, you're just crushing it. Crushing it.
I'm excited to play the game with you guys. I'm excited.
I was most positive about Ark Nova on our first play.
Who was?
I was most positive about Ark Nova.
Yes, you were on the very first play. Yes, yes.
Excited to play this game with you guys. I think you're going to really enjoy it.
I'm ordering it without even having played it. I saw what was going on over there, and I'm like, that is something I want to get
into.
There's
some cool modules that are really
worth smelling it. What the Rock was putting down over there.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. And then this morning,
oh boy,
10 a.m., Saturday morning,
donuts, coffee, friendship.
After game night till one till 1 a.m.
Which is nice because I was in bed at 9:30.
We do the quick turnaround. We come on over to Maddie's.
Yep. And so we brought two new Essen hotness games out to the table today. I looked up the pronunciation of this. The first game we played was, what are you showing me?
He did the same thing.
I looked that up.
How to pronounce?
Tiletum. Tiletum. But we don't, in English, tum is awkward. So it's Tiletum.
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 I call it Tiletum.
I just think you say it's a T game, so you can say Tiletum. That's fine. Tiletum. We played Tiletum, and then we played.
The middle symbol is the one that's.
Okay. It's fine. It's
is it though?
Tiletum.
We played Tiletum, and then we played Revive.
Those both, the by the way, if you read the entire thread, nobody agrees.
Yeah, no, nobody agrees.
They all have a different...
Trey's learned 3 games in 24 hours.
By the way...
Actually, 12 hours, I think. Yeah. 3 games.
Trey, you did real good.
Yeah.
Of note, real good. Tiletum and Revive, both Essen releases, and both games are propping up our microphones today.
That's right. And I can say right now that these are my two favorite games I've played this year thus far.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. What else is even in competition?
Cool.
That's a good question.
Every HNXX.
We're not ready for that conversation yet. But.
Okay. Should we jump into Tiletum?
Yes. Sure.
Okay. So Tiletum is from, I don't know, these two young up and coming designers. I wish them well. Simone Luciani and Daniel Tashini.
Never heard of them.
These guys did 2 games together before. Maybe you might've heard of things. One was, I don't know how to pronounce this, Zolkin, the Mayan calendar. And the other one was The Voyages of Marco Polo. I don't know. It's hard to decide, but I think both of these, both of these are two of the greatest games ever made in our hobby.
Yep.
Got it. And then this is the third game these two have ever worked on together.
Oh.
I just looked that up.
Because they all pair off and do different things, yeah. And Toschini does things with other people.
I need an Italian designer lesson, because I get them mixed up. So it's a T game,
yeah,
but it's not the same. Teotihuacan is...
Say what the T games are.
Teotihuacan, so every T game has one of them on it.
Okay.
But only Zolkin and this one have both of them on it.
Okay.
But Simone Luciani did Barrage, and Grand Austria, and Lorenzo Magnifico, and then...
Whereas Toschini has focused more on the T games a little bit.
Right.
He's
the one who did Teotihuacan, and Tekenyu, and Trismegistus.
There are those the
therefore,
T's.
You're more of a... No, Luciani is my favorite designer of all time, hands down. Nobody even comes close. Barrage, Zolkin, Grand Austria, Voyages, Lorenzo, this. I mean, forget it. That's my guy.
Yeah.
So... Urison,
thought you were Agricola. What happened?
Of course. Well, Agricola is my favorite game of all time. But I mean, if I had to pick a designer and I could only own their games, well, it would still be Agricola. But,
yeah,
but if I couldn't choose Agricola,
Okay, you can only own the games by one designer.
We're not
which designer?
What you did that last week? You already did your
you got
stranded on a desert island.
Totally different.
It's a recycle. Totally different. Major recycle. What?
Who would be the designer? You can only own games by one designer.
Francis Tresham.
Hey,
you got 18XX. That covers all the 18XX games.
And Civilization.
I'm probably picking Simone Luciani because
Western Empires, baby.
I get 5 of my favorite games.
I don't know who I'd choose.
I would choose the Splatter guys.
Okay, sure.
What about Underwater Cities guy? I love his stuff.
Vladimir?
Yeah.
Vladimir's fantastic. Yeah.
Anywho,
Suchi.
But I would go with the Splatter guys.
Let's talk about Tiletum. Tiletum.
Okay, no, we can't pronounce it the same way, not even twice.
Tiletumatus.
What do we do in this game, Matt?
So this is a game where we are all merchants in Middle Europe in the Renaissance.
In the Beige period.
What's the Beige period?
The Tom? Beige.
Oh, the Beige period. Yes.
The board is,
my parents are still in the Beige period.
Yes.
This is a
it's a phase that's coming fast for me.
A dice action selection game, much like these guys.
All right, everyone, let me tell you something. This is the announcer from Ready, Set, Bet, and I've got some news for you.
Much like these guys often like to do, I'll stop saying guys. These designers often like to do dice action selection games,
right,
wherein you roll a bunch of dice, and that decides the strength or weakness or availability of actions for the round. You'll find that in Marco Polo. You'll find that in...
I've selected my dice, Money Penny.
You'll find it in Tiletum. So this is a game where I read the rule book. I looked at it and I went, I don't know. Like, okay. And then I read the rule book and I was like, oh, this feels like a system to me. In the sense that the variable setup decides the entire strategy of the game. And so there are, in the game, there are four fairs that are going to happen. And you've got a map of Europe, and you're going to be flipping over randomly, choosing out of like 10 tiles that are different cities. And that's going to decide the cities that will have fairs in them. And then you decide the actual things that those fairs are going to be scoring. So for example, you flip over a tile and it says, in London, in round three, you will be scoring the merchant houses you've put out on the board. And in one game that's there, and one game that's not. And that could totally change the way that you approach the game. And the fact that there's only four fairs in every game, and the fact that they're all going to be in different cities and they're going to come at every time is going to completely change the way you play the game. This is the opposite of Agricola, where you know most information is going to be the same other than the cards you're dealt. This is, holy crap, it's a different game every time you play. And that, to me, always gets me excited, because I really like a game wherein, if the turns are fun, I want infinite replayability to it.
Yeah.
And so to me, when reading, I was like, oh, these turns are fun. I like these choices. Mm-hmm. And then if every time I play it, it feels like a completely different experience that has high ceiling of chance that it's something I'm going to love.
Right. And dice drafting is always very, very interesting thing, much like Troyes.
Yep.
And in this game, the interesting
Troyes thing is one of the cities in this game that can be a scoring city.
Probably the most unique design choice, which is also a great design choice, is that the die works both ways. In other words, it works on both sides. If you have a die that has a number 5 on it, you're going to get 5 of whatever resource that die represents.
There's 5 different colors of dice.
But you also get 2 actions of whatever sliver of the action rondel that die is in. So
it always adds up to 7.
It always adds up to 7.
Whatever the die is, you get a
number
of actions.
No bad rolls, exactly.
Yeah, we've seen.
The most part, they're balanced.
I felt like I got most of the bad rolls.
So like that's a really fun choice. It's like, okay, I can do 6 architect actions, but then I only get 1 gold because there's a 1 pip yellow die in that sliver of the pie. Or I could get, 6
stone
food, but 1 jester action. And then it's like those decisions are really juicy. Or a 3 of something and 4 actions. And that's like, well, that's really well balanced. And then in addition to that, there's these bonus tiles that are placed out that you can be getting. So the choices are really juicy, and the turns are simple. This was a simple teach. I feel like this is a game that can be taught in about 20 minutes. It's not complicated. The rules are pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's only 5 actions in the game. If you've played Euros before, nothing that I will explain is going to be, you're just go, oh, got it. Yeah. So like just the 2 main actions of the game are the merchant action and the architect action. And on them, you get a certain amount of points to spend, and you can spend them either moving point to point along a board, picking up tiles, or dropping down buildings. It's very simple.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we've seen a lot of dice drafting games before, and some are great, some are fine, some are forgettable, obviously. This one, I thought this one rocked. I mean, this one, it just worked for me in terms of like the choices were great. I feel like we were able to string together many combos on our turns, but I never felt like it was one of those crazy bonkers combo thing where then you're just sort of sitting there. It was usually, I felt like 2 or 3 really good combos and then we'd move forward.
Compared to
some other games we played recently, very recently, extremely recently,
super, super recently.
But I think at the end of the day, the interesting dice drafting is going to rise and fall on whether or not there are interesting things to do with those dice. And I liked what we had to do with the dice. In some ways, it was like a throwback, not a throwback, but very simple things like use that die to get some people to join your weird, I guess, your weird Renaissance fair buildings that you have or whatever. I don't really know what you're doing in this game, like going to fairs in the Renaissance.
We're merchants and traveling through Europe.
But also building
and
cathedrals.
Architects.
Yeah, and visiting places that are having fairs and being involved.
And building cathedrals.
Yeah.
So, and paying homage to the king in one way or another.
Yeah,
and paying homage.
Whatever it takes to get his good favor, and I will do
turn order matters a lot. So this is my first time playing it. And
it's
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, first time.
Oh, okay. The thing I liked is, like, because of the way the fairs give it structure, we know what are going to score points in the game. We're all going to be getting that, right? It's not like a choice. Mm-hmm.
Scoring card we have.
Yeah. I mean, there's things that we have to do, but those things that we have to do actually, like, gave me a good chunk of structure from the beginning so that I felt like, okay, here's some things I need to do immediately, you know, like, and I can start doing them immediately. And that just made my initial decisions feel very manageable.
Yeah.
You know? And that, so I wasn't lost at all at the beginning. It was more like I had two or three and kind of very solid different directions I could go.
It does, it does that nice balance of enough of like, oh, a decision load on your head, but also a feeling of like, I can manage this.
Well, let's hear what the third and fourth player in the first round got to feel
Yes.
because they might have a different perspective.
Well, I was going to have a very positive perspective as the person who was fourth in that first round. Uh-huh. And my positive perspective was that Trey and Matt, they were Matt was first, Trey was second in that first round. And initially I was like, you know, screw these guys because they've taken the bonuses. They've taken the two things that I need. They gobbled
up all of the low-hanging fruit.
They gobbled.
Every little bit.
And the low-hanging fruit was obvious. It was fairly obvious.
But what I liked is it made us zag. Well, it made you zag, and then I had to zag on your zag.
Yeah.
And I actually liked that, and I liked that there were meaningful things for us to zag into, and we were able to continue zagging into them for the rest of the game in a way that I didn't feel was I was just on a wild goose chase. I felt like I was still competitive in the game. And I also want to say before, because I know you have a slightly different, seems like you have a slightly different opinion coming up, but I enjoyed the scoring in this game. There was a lot of drama between, I was actually in first for a large swath of the game. And
there
was a lot of,
after the first
there was
round.
A lot of like up and down and drama. And I thought that was all very exciting and very fun. So I really had no problem with how that worked out. But what about you, Tom?
Well, I would say that of the four of us, if you had to say who likes the meanest game, I would say normally I think I would like the meanest game. I think Trey is...
Since Paul's not here, Trey is pretty
yeah. close. Yeah. But I don't mind a game that bloodies my nose, okay? I don't mind a game like a game like Lignum I love, which is so punishing. Like, you want to do such simple little things, and the game just seems to conspire to prevent you from doing any of it. And you have to really fight and claw for every little advantage you can get. And I love that experience. I love to struggle to succeed in a game. I really like that. This game may have, for a first play, I was like, oh man, this is really rough. This is really rough. Like, and we all kind of said the same thing, which was, I think Trey and I said it first, which was, I don't want to look at the board or what anyone is doing until it is my turn, because all I'm doing is looking at, oh, I really want to do this. No, Matt just did that. Okay, well, I mean, I guess, you know what? I could do that, and that would still be pretty... Oh, Trey just did that.
But in that dread is where a lot of excitement lay for me.
You know, yeah, no, it's pretty great.
I'll say this, though. I never had that experience once happen to me. Now, maybe that's just luck. I was going third most of the game. I was going third for the second, third, and fourth round.
Yep.
Every single time I knew what I wanted to do my next turn, there was never a time when I couldn't do it. Now, maybe somebody had taken the crest I wanted or things like that, but I found the gold made whatever action I wanted. I never could not take the action I needed. I just made sure I had enough gold. And in fact, I think you're saying at the beginning of the game that you felt like trapped a little bit and the good actions were taken. Maybe the crest was taken that you wanted.
Yes.
But you could have made, with four extra gold than anybody else than I or Trey had, you could have made any die, pretty much. You could and taken a bonus nobody had taken before.
Well, so
but you didn't. You also, nobody did spend gold.
Not to get too particular about it, but we're the first round. We're scoring Tulletum.
Yeah,
we're scoring that place,
the
and we're all
that's
there.
Happening in Tulletum.
Right, we're all there. So what people are doing in the first round is setting up for the second round, and one of the ways you can do that is by building a house in the town where the next scoring is going to happen.
Right.
In the first two actions, you two scored both of them and took all of the accessible crests.
Crests, right.
All the crests that were available. Those are two big...
Yeah, we did.
Right, but also...
Yeah, those are two big things.
The most... Like, we're going to get at most 24 out of points out of that. So, don't you think the right move there is to go... Fuck that. I'm just focusing on round three and four, and I'm going to crush these people who wasted early action.
Yeah, and I focused on cathedral building. I picked one cathedral that was scored significantly more points than everyone else, and I got everything I needed. And then Ben got everything he needed to do the exact same thing.
I made friends with the king, and the king gave me certain benefits. There's certain advantages of being bedfellows.
Friends.
Ben was just... Ben was... Ben was the rain's butt, and it was just.
I think it's hard to have an accurate idea of how bloody nosy this game can be without really feeling like you've mastered how to play it yet.
Yeah. I will say
it's certainly early.
There's no directed aggression.
Yeah,
it's just you're taking opportunities away from people.
Right. I would say this. I would say that I don't see any way that the game doesn't get more bloody nosy the more skilled we are at playing it.
Also you get better at knowing how to mitigate your losses and how to zig and zag and you get better at instantly going, okay, I'm going third. I know this is happening. I know this is happening. So what can I do?
I feel like you're defending something that I'm not actually attacking.
Right. You actually like a lot of the things you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. What I said was, is this too much for me? At the end of the day, no, it was not. It was a delight. It was
too much of a good thing.
Well, yeah. I will say that there were a couple things that surprised me. One was how swingy it is. It is. Ben was ahead.
You could have a 40-point turn.
Ben was easily. Ben was 40 to 50 points ahead of the next player, and we were like,
"Was it that much?"
It was
substantial. I was on a parallel side of the board than you guys.
He was on the complete other side of the scoring board.
Classic Prefontaine
than we were. It was Prefontaine.
Is it swinging or is it balanced? I mean, you guys all caught.
In one turn, not only did we caught up, but you were in last at that moment. And
well, I also, by the way. I did a cardinal sin, which is that I swerved. I had spent my entire game doing really a few things, and then I had this moment where I said, oh no, I got to put some houses out. So I used up an entire turn doing that, which netted me 3 points. Or no, I got some other points, some ancillary points from it, but it was not necessary.
That's growing pains.
Yeah. I think it was not that it's swingy. I think it's just, it's balanced, and I think that I took some big points at one point, and then you guys took big points.
What was our spread at the end? 30 points?
Tom from top was, to bottom, Tom
yeah, about 30 points, and we all scored close to 200. So that's pretty good for a first game. That's not one person had 50 and one person had 250.
The top three of us were within like 10 to 12 points,
and over Tom 200.
The thing that you're talking about, Tom, was encapsulated in one moment where, like, I made the mistake of when I had the opportunity to build a monument.
Yes,
I did not. Build it immediately.
A
cathedral. I didn't build immediately. Then Matt swooped in, built it immediately, both like netting him 4 more points and costing me 4 more points. And I was like, oh, wait, is it this kind of game? And then you said, well, I was going to do that if he didn't do it. And so it's that's what this game is. Yeah. It's like I'm just seeing like we were all zeroing in on the same crest, the same opportunities. We're racing constantly.
Yeah. And what Matt's talking about, if you have the money, you can do anything because you can shift. It sounds like that's the solution to the bloody nose problem, but in reality, it's the cause of the bloody nose problem. Right. Like you can figure out a way. Like
you have to
you
assume everyone can do everything.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Good.
Ben is about to score that major thing that I've seen him spend an entire round just setting up for. Oh, guess what? If I spend this food and do this way. I'm gonna take it before he ever gets.
This game makes
to
you feel
it.
Smart, and then you realize no, everyone at the table is as smart as you.
But you know what? But you know what though? Like I definitely came away from this game. I had a really great time playing it, even though I was in the lead and I wound up in third place ultimately. And like to some people, that could have felt like a really shitty moment. Like oh my god, it all fell apart. That's not fair. I was
You're
doing
so
well.
Mature.
And
they got out of- You're so mature.
But like, luckily, I'm very mature. But also, this game to me. Like it felt like a game that was made by someone who's been doing this a while and knows what they're doing and knows the pressure points, knows how to like create simple systems that like motivate us.
We were in good hands.
Good hands. Loved it. I loved the way it looked even. It was very beige in a way that I really enjoyed.
And there were things that we never even explored. Like nobody really did the completing the houses on your player board.
Right.
Well, I think that you could get 30 points or 40, 50 points
all
for that.
Let's talk
and
about
I,
the player
I don't think
board
anybody
really
got more than 10 points
so
for that.
I think this game, and something that I like a lot in games, it's something that I think is a salve to your complaint about heads down solitaire games. I think this game does a really good job of putting as much focus on your player board as there is on the main board. Mm-hmm. And they're both really interesting and they're both really important. And I think the player board here is really fun and exciting because it does a couple things. There's two different set collections that are happening in the game. You're collecting these characters. So imagine you have like six different little skyscrapers in your building and you can put characters in them. And then they also places to hold crests. So you're doing set collection of crests and you're doing set collection of characters in order to fill these buildings. When you get all a building completely full of characters and crests, you permanently get a modifier to a specific action in the game. So now for the rest of the game, I get +2 on my king actions, things like that. So you're building this really fun engine that you can start really dialing in your game towards.
And intertwined with all the systems.
Right, exactly. And then then those things score really well. Just the end game scoring, how clean it is. It's just like, it's your buildings times your pillars, and it's how well you fill your buildings. Like, those are all things that you should be doing. And they've done a good job of being like, no matter what the fares are, no matter what the scoring is, that's always going to be relevant. Because if you took one of those out, I think the game falls apart, because it's like, well, now it totally makes my player board irrelevant.
It appeared that with the random setup, which is a big attractor to me as well, Matt, I totally agree with you on that, that we had a particularly hard setup. The locations where we had to go
were four corners.
In really disparate, like opposite ends of the map, and there was a lot of central map territory that could have come up and didn't. So we may have had like kind of a bruising first round anyway, first play anyway. But yeah, let me just be clear. I was getting punched. I finished in last by a good margin. I was getting like everything I tried to do, somebody was doing right before
me. You had a great rally too, by the
way. Well, I appreciate that. But what I mean to say is that I could not tell you I am still buzzing about that game.
Yeah.
Still buzzing about it.
If we were 100%. If we didn't all have to leave after this, I would push to play it again. I'm dying to try it one more time.
It felt like a classic, but it felt fresh too. You know, I really dislike set collecting. That's like one of my least favorite things to do. I don't like set collecting. I think contract fulfillment is fine, but I don't think it's very exciting. Tracks, I can give or take. This game had all three. I loved all of it.
Yeah, they were all really fun. They were all simple. They weren't like trying to reinvent the wheel. They were just like, here's the best version of this kind of thing.
It's just like, it worked. I'm really happy with this. I can't wait to play it again.
One thing I like, you were talking about the bonuses to certain actions you get. When you get these bonuses, and it's like, now I'm +2 at, like, for example, Ben, you had a +2 on the king action, which was scoring you points and giving you first player every round. But what I liked about that is that when you got that bonus, it went on the central board, like where we're taking our action. So I could immediately see, Ben's really good at this. You could kind of see where people had specialized based upon where those bonuses were. Whereas oftentimes I feel like we're playing these games, and if you're especially efficient at something, Tom, I kind of have to look over at your player board and take in a lot of information and kind of process it, as opposed to, look, Ben's really good at the king action, and you know, Tom's really good at the contract action.
Which I would say that is maybe my addendum to what Matt was saying about the player board versus the main board being equally important. I feel like there's so much on the main board that tells you the state of the game that I think it's probably, for me, it seemed more like 2/3 of the focus is the main board. Mm. But then your own personal board, oh boy, the things that you can do that we've only begun to explore in our very first play is kind of amazing.
I love the limitation of the storage too. It's called Tiletum, which is a little bit of a joke because the game is tiles. I mean, there's a million tiles in this game, and you can only hold 4 of them at a time. And that's actually an exciting constraint in the game, because all you want to do is just scoop up as many tiles as you can. But
did anybody feel like they ever really got knocked by that one?
Yeah, I felt there was times where I was like,
because you were doing heavy merc.
I was doing a lot of characters, and I was picking up a lot of stuff, and I was like, I got to. That's why I was taking all these little tiny contracts. Cause I was like, if anything I bring in, I got to be able to get out real quick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that actually,
I had a fairly significant contract game too, and that mucks up the works pretty quick.
But also, did you notice my last point on this is that I can't help but notice, just thinking back on our gameplay, that the table talk, the banter, was really fun. Like, it was a game that, you know,
it wasn't heads down silence.
Yeah, promoted lots of like chatter. Some of it was like funny, and some of it was getting into, I don't know if it was so much getting into story, but there was a lot of banter back and forth.
Veiled threats, non-veiled threats.
Yeah, but there were like, you should be doing, maybe you should do this or whatever. I just felt like it was
disparagement.
There was a presence above the table that was very fun. And I think that when games can inspire that, it's always a good thing.
I did it. Okay, so my one negative.
Yep.
Tom kind of talked about this before, which was, it's a bad time when you've just taken your turn, because it's going to be a while before you go again, and it was hard to kind of like prepare for it. And Matt, I know you kind of saying you didn't experience this. I felt this way where it's like, I'm trying to plan stuff out, but like things really were going to change so dramatically before it got back to my turn.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of a checkout sometime where like, I don't really have to start paying attention until it gets to the person in front of
which
me.
Which is problematic because that slows the game down exponentially.
It almost doesn't benefit you to prepare for anything because the odds of that being non-existent by the time it gets to you, even if it's just the player right before you, is fairly significant. It's a very fluid system, right? Fluid situation.
But I did find myself waiting.
I found that what I was doing was I was creating an A plan, a B plan, a C plan. Yeah, I was coming up with a little bit. Yep. So I was actually okay with it, but it was like, you know, my heart would be like racing, like, please don't.
I would just say, when I said the game was mean, it was because my C plan fell apart and then it was my turn to go.
I play a lot of Castles of Burgundy on VGA.
Yeah.
And the main thing I've learned from playing that game competitively is the most valuable resources workers. The things that to be flexible, to enter into a turn and to be forced to take things or to have to spend actions getting workers is doom. The way to be competitive in that game is to make sure that the dice are irrelevant as possible. And I went into this game with that same mind space. So I really focused on gold. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's why I felt like I always knew exactly what action I was going to take. And it was just a matter of how much gold it was going to cost me if somebody else took it.
Mm, same for me.
I didn't change the dice the entire game.
Wow.
There you go. Yeah, I did constantly.
And
I
was doing it a lot. By the way, for everyone, Trey won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. A big day. Well,
there
today.
You go.
It was good. It was a good run the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
I got a rock.
So yeah, that look for me.
We're going to be talking about this for a long time. This game.
I'm eager to play it again.
Yeah. The two things I'm taking away from my first play, I don't want an expansion. This is one of those games where I play it and I'm like, no, I'm good.
I mean, maybe, but I'm going to be great with this for a while.
It's at the right spot.
Yeah. It's at the right spot. Like this. Yeah. I love a game when I just feel like it's done. This is a fully baked game. And also, I could see playing this in 10 years. This seems like a game that it's too early to say, but this seems like a game that could be a keeper in the collection.
Now, Matt, you and I got
as long with Zolkin and Marco Polo.
Yeah. You and I texted back and forth what games we were going to order from Essen and have them shipped over.
I was burned out on these
guys.
And
you said,
bit.
I don't think I'm going to get to
after
that.
Newton, after
done.
Gollum, after Tawantinsuyu. Those are all games, though, where they didn't come together. But all their separate games had me a little like apprehensive about, like, I just felt like they were maybe working too much. But when these two gentlemen come together,
and I
can say, yeah. I mean, look, Zolkin and Marco Polo, are there other two games? Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
this is their third game together.
I said, like, it's Simone and Danielle. I think we got to get it.
Yeah,
you said,
right.
Okay, we'll get it. And then you didn't tell me that you changed your order. So my order is still in Germany.
You'll be getting it next week with Woodcraft, and now I'll be waiting a month for Woodcraft.
Oh, I've done, and I've pre-ordered none of them, except for Atua, by the way. I'm so excited.
Yeah,
Atua's on the way.
Atua's coming.
I'll get that this week also.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'll be getting my Toledo next week, and we'll be playing the heck out of this. Yeah. No question about it.
Should we move on to the featured game?
I think we better, because we're gonna cut this this episode at around the 90-minute mark.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Is it hold on, how do we pronounce it?
Revive.
Revive. Revive.
Yeah. So I played the game 5 times. So Revive is basically a game in a post-apocalyptic
do you want me
world.
To do the stats real quick?
Yeah, please. By all means. Yeah, let me
do, I should have probably been ready before I said that.
No, it's okay.
If you've ever read the book
Seven Eves, this could be a Seven Eves situation.
Great part. Part two.
This is a new game from Aporta Games, who have also done The Magnificent. The designers are Hege Meisner, Elif Svensson, Anna Wormlund, Christian Amundsen Ostby.
All perfect pronunciations.
Thank you very much. Two of these designers work together on Santa Maria and The Magnificent. Which we liked.
If I had to put together a list of three games that I want the most to play again,
to try again,
I didn't sell it.
I still have Santa Maria.
I still want to play Santa Maria more, because I think there's more to that game that we haven't explored
yet.
Except it has
Did we give up early on it? We had like first play, but it wasn't love. But we never gave it that second chance to really know.
Yeah,
I think it's a pretty great game. But like, you know, the theme, not great. The designers, I believe, said that it was actually supposed to be a satire about colonization. A little bit like
sure.
Like, I don't know.
That didn't come across.
Didn't love that.
Yeah.
But
And The Magnificent, good game. Not great, but good game. Solid game.
I'm not sure I remember The Magnificent. What is it?
It was the one, it had the dark tiles with the day glow colors, and you were spending your crystal, you were gathering crystals.
Oh, yeah,
crystals.
Yeah, you're like, it's like a circus fair.
Crystal circus fair, exactly.
Yeah. We played, that's fine. It's good.
So, it was a good game.
This game came on my radar from Jeremy Howard.
It's not so bad.
Jeremy Howard, who's with Man vs. Meeple. Shout out to Jeremy Howard, one of my favorite board game content creators.
We love him.
He did a review of it where he said this was his Ark Nova. And I find that I have almost never disagreed with anything. He's one of the few people who I'm like, oh, that this guy and me have always lined up on games we like. And he was like, he's like, game one, I got the first feeling I got playing Ark Nova. I was like, oh, I'm in. So I was like, okay, I'm blind buying it off that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Read the rule book, sounded totally great. The theme of the game I also liked as well. It's the world ended 5,000 years ago due to some climate disaster. All of mankind has moved into a hole in the ground. We've lived underground, but in disparate communities with different ideologies. And now the ice has started to thaw on our frozen planet.
Coming back out to ruin the planet again.
We're going
to
take another bite at the apple.
It's really cold, but if history says anything, we're going to warm it up real fast.
Real fast. So we're all going to come out, but we all have different ideologies, which is just a fun way of giving reasons why we all have asymmetrical powers. And we are going to try to score the most points by conquering land and building things and upping our tech and doing all the basic sort of civ building-y things. But in a lot of ways, the game has a little bit of an abstract feel to me in a strange way.
Well, there's only five things you do on a turn, right? You play a card.
And they're all about different ways you put down different pieces.
Yeah, I mean, the two bookkeeper ones are you play a card into one of four slots on your board, or you flip a switch, in which case you have somebody discard their card and you take the benefits on their card, which is a good thing, not a bad thing in this game. And then all the rest of the actions are three things. You're exploring by flipping over a new tile. You are building a building or a town.
Right. So exploring is like taking a frozen tundra and flipping it over and revealing the land underneath.
Correct. Building, which is you go to one of these sand areas on the map, of which there are many, many hexes that are that way, put down a building and collect the resources that are around that, which are not really resources so much as opportunities to move your
track bumps,
enigmatic machine that is in front of you.
Which is really just three different tracks that intertwine in interesting ways.
Which is cool.
Which move and open up other little bonus actions that you can take as free actions in addition to the two actions you get each turn. Right. And then the third thing is to populate. There are ancient destroyed cities that you can put population in, and by doing that, you're expanding your reach.
They give you technology that they have.
Yes, they do. And that is the asymmetrical powers of the game. So, yeah, it's
simple. It's also much like Teletum, a 20-minute teach. Not that bad. It's pretty simple.
It is.
More significant.
Having taught it five times, yeah, I think Trey is dead on right. Trey, what was your feeling with the teach?
You did a terrible job.
Thank you.
No, I think maybe as a comparison to Teletum, when I completed the teach of Revive, I still had kind of like no idea what I was supposed to be doing. I needed a lot of help from you guys just to kind of like, okay, please just point me in the right direction here. Yeah. What's a standard play? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
This is a very sandboxy opening of a game.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could almost go, it's like, oh man, I feel like whatever I choose, I'm sort of locked into that for a while.
They give you little goal cards, but the goal cards are like,
even then, I didn't know how to pursue those exactly.
Yeah. And the game is resource tight as hell in the beginning of the game.
And by the way, I say the right things. Like I say that, okay, you're going to get more of these lightning symbols and you're going to be able to put electricity and take more actions. And invariably, every time people are like, wait, how do I get those lightning symbols again? And then
by the end of the game, you're going to have a ton of these.
I've got them coming out of my butt. I've got so many of these things.
But I definitely was struggling to kind of, like, the narrative wasn't helping me as much as a lot of times the way a good narrative and story can kind of give me the meaning.
That might be why I feel that it has an abstract feel a little bit to me.
Yeah, I'm not agree. I don't know why. Maybe it's the game teacher in me now. Yeah. It's like, I don't think it's really abstract.
No, it's not.
But I was struggling there in the same way that I have struggled when I was like trying to learn an 18XX, where I'm just like, I am not ready to make these decisions, designer. I needed some structure.
Yeah.
And I think you guys were talking about, like, they actually do have a different experience for like the first time you play it.
Let's that talk
we
about
didn't
that.
Exactly do.
The game says that it has a campaign mode. I do not like that term because it is not.
Technically.
But it's not. If we were to be honest, like when you say campaign mode, people are going to think something that it is not. Because what it does have is it does have a way to ease you into the game by playing a simpler version of the game for the first game. And then you unlock,
right.
you have a one card size bit mm-hmm. of narrative right. that gives you the next little bit and then the next little
but
bit.
Yeah, the problem is,
like, four games later, you're playing the full game.
Right. And the difference between teaching the basic game and the full game is about 5 minutes.
I do not like when games get there. I don't like when games do this. Sky Mines does it with some of... Sky Mines has a bunch of modules that we talked about a few weeks ago, and you unlock the modules by doing the campaign. But there are a lot of games that sort of have these... rather than saying, hey, here's the full game, just play it, they like layer you in with the modules.
There's a reason they do it, though, which is that they know from playtesting that new players are struggling to take in all the things you need to take in. So, like, what can we do to fix this?
That's precisely what I was going to say, which is I totally agree with you, Ben, that for us, this is useless.
For the big brain.
Throw it out. No.
For people but who play this a game is, ton of board games.
Yeah. This game is aimed at a... This game is a medium weight Euro game. It is not heavier than that when you get right down to it.
No, it's not.
But it does. But it has a surprisingly hard teach for the level of gameplay it is, which is why they built that in. Which is why they did that. So,
but instead of a campaign, it should have just been called Basic Rules, Advanced Rules.
Yes,
because they do a silly thing.
The learner's game.
There's literally like an extra cardboard piece that says like, "Don't punch these out in your first game," and like, if
don't
you
don't flip this over like, until
and,
you're ready.
And the rules are hidden. Mm-hmm. Like you can't just be like, no. If they just called it Advanced Rules, I could have just looked in the rule book and been like, "Here's the difference in this and that." But otherwise, they hide
they
it.
Did this behind. For a
That's
reason?
Like Tuscany. I know. Tuscany is actually a legacy,
but it's not a helpful thing for experience.
Tuscany is legacy. Did you know that Tuscany is a legacy game? That all those things about the mamas and the papas and all that, it was supposed to be like a quote-unquote legacy. And you're just like, just say it's just modules.
But
I guess my only thing is that I just don't like when games do it because I feel like sometimes there have been times I have put a game to the table at like that kind of basic mode.
Sure.
And people are like, it's okay. I mean, look at Terraforming Mars. I remember the first time I played Terraforming Mars with the basic card set.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, and I'm just like, I feel like a game should just go out, should just arrive on the table in its best form, and either
you decide what your players are ready for.
Yeah,
I certainly for us,
Dinosaur Island did it too.
Yeah, certainly for us, that's the best way to play.
Yeah,
but especially for a game that is, I mean, straight down the middle, medium weight. It is not. Yeah. It is not heavy medium. It's not light medium either. It's just. It's a flat out medium weight game in terms of the actual. Once you get through one play,
the asymmetric powers make it a little bit heavier, just in terms of understanding everybody.
Well, let's talk large about decision space. They're not. It's not crunchy as hell, but there's a lot of like, oh, I could kind of do anything this, here.
Maybe medium heavy, maybe, but there's only three things you do. It's not. There's not a lot.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard. It's that gets into what is what is heavy.
Yeah,
and what like because I think last week on Space Station Phoenix, you said that was like. You practically called that a light game, and I don't know if that would. I would say that's like a light game. So I think like we all just have different standards.
Sure, yeah, that's fair.
Of like what heaviness is, but there's definitely rules overhead, and there's also a lot of combos, and there's a lot of iconography. So this can be a thicket of stuff.
This is definitely a mommy, look at me game where it's like you know
you have some mega turns.
Yeah, and like but at the end, you know what? It didn't bother me in this game the way it does in other games. Like I don't know. It hasn't so far because to me it feels like. This isn't one of those games where there's no point in figuring out what I'm going to do until it comes back to me. In fact, there's very few things, and maybe that's a downside. There's very few things I feel like others can do that can affect my next turn that much, other than make it a couple more books or a couple more food expensive in order to do things. So I am using all my turn figuring out my best move, and when it comes to me, I'm ready to go, which it makes the game feel faster.
As I said,
I benefited from other people's explorers. My asymmetrical powers. Like other people were opening up the board, and I could jump to it, and that maybe... Yeah,
I mean, I said that my first play was nah. I was like, it is two heads down. Yep. It is you have this
tracks,
beautiful
tracks.
Board that is doing all these things, and it has nothing to do with any of the other players. Second play, I was like, because I was noticing that with the more plays, actually grabbing the best spaces on the board is really hard, tricky thing to do.
That's Tom's watch, in case anyone is.
Is it my watch?
Tom's watch is trying to chime get in on the podcast.
It's always getting on, only on the podcast. It doesn't really do that any other times. I don't know what's going on.
I have something to say. Yes.
Sorry, Siri.
Is that when your favorite OnlyFans people go live? You set an alert for that?
Completely. 100%. But then the third and fourth play were significantly a little bit better each time, where I saw that, oh, you know what? If you wanted to play this kind of game, it actually, with more plays, it does become more player versus player, because there are a limited number of spaces that are better than other spaces that you're competing for.
Yeah, to me, the main form of interaction, which I totally would understand if it's not enough for somebody who's looking for interaction, is that this is a race. This yes. is a race game. If you're not playing this as a race game, you're going to lose. Like, you are racing for points. And the most, you know, alien skulls you get, crystal skulls, whatever, at the end of the game is what's going to end the game. And it looks like, well, it's going to take forever for anybody to get those. And then eventually they're all gobbled up in two rounds.
They go up immediately.
If you're not prepared for that rush and you don't have your stuff set up by then. Mm-hmm. So to me, the interaction comes from the clock of the game, of being like, okay, I can do whatever I want, but now I have six turns to do it, and I better figure out the most efficient way and how to edge out others and to make sure that I'm scoring higher.
Yeah, I think that, like, the things that I really like about
that's
the game.
That's indirect, I guess, but it is interaction.
The things I like about the game, first and foremost, I like the presentation of the game. I think the player board is, like, big and chunky. When we talk about those three tracks, it's not like just three lines with notches on them. These are like three kind of like spiraling things, and
interconnected.
They're interconnected, and they do interesting things wherein if you get up to like notch number 9 on the gray track and maybe like notch number 4 or 5 on the green track, you can unlock the ability to have a special power. And this is one of those games where they kind of said, oh, you don't just get to unlock a special power, you get to choose the special power that you want to have.
You get to build your machine.
So there's so much you get to build. You get to build there. You get to add these things that Tom called plinths, but we learned were slot
module tokens.
Tokens.
Great name.
What's the first word? What is that?
Plinth.
Plinth.
I don't know what that is. What is a plinth?
It's a slot module
token.
It's a flat board onto which you place things. It's a base.
Where do we encounter plinths in our natural environment?
I mean, you're sitting on a plinth. The seat of your chair is a plinth. Back of your chair is a plinth.
There's plinths everywhere, Trey. There's plinths all the way down,
is
baby.
Is it a beveled surface? Like, what is?
We call them SMTs from now on.
Have you never heard of the great
slot module tokens? SMTs. Yeah,
I've never been a plinth.
Okay, Sylvia Plinth.
It's the. You know when you have a vase and it has that little platform that it goes on? Yes.
Yeah, or do you like the actress Martha Plimpton?
I've met Martha Plimpton.
Really?
Yeah. The base of a statue, of a column, even all those things like that flat part. That's
oh yeah.
Well, and from statue. Sex and the City, there's Plinthia and Nixon.
All right, let's get back on topic.
Anyway, I gotta watch Plinth Side Edition tonight from all my celebrity gossip. Okay, so the point is with all these plinths. They basically look like teeth, by the way. They look like massively
or
decayed
cat tongues.
They look like dark, decayed teeth that you stick on your board. But it's actually intensely gratifying. And so the ability to customize all these aspects, and every time you do something, it feels like you're doing a more powerful version of it, is really fun.
There's a real build-a-bear element to this.
Yeah.
Like, build
you
a plinth.
You can really build
your picking
own
special abilities to put on. Only you get these special abilities.
They were smart to call it a machine, because you really do feel like you're literally building an engine.
And you're making your action stronger. You can make your bonus action stronger. You can make your card action stronger. And then as you put people out into these cities or whatever, you start building like your own faction powers stronger. So you do feel like you got the wind in your sails. And that is, I think that's one of the strongest aspects of the game. That's like what I think that was my favorite part of it.
Yeah. So let's talk some negatives from our perspective. Okay. So for one, I don't think that the asymmetrical powers are that asymmetric. There's one that is. I think the Falcon is significantly different than the other guys. I think the rest of us don't play that different. They do. First of all, you can only the accessing the special powers. I think it's 5 times in the whole game maximum. And
no, you can do as many times as you want.
Well, yeah, but most people don't even. But out of the many plays we saw, I would say only half the time does a player get through even all five of those, and they're minor tweaks to the rules of the game.
Mine felt really game defining, but
okay, well, maybe that's just
the power I played with the first time. I played this game twice. The first time I played with Matt, I played sort of a basic power because your factions have 2 sides. You can have like a basic,
And you can decide even in the quote unquote advanced game, you decide which side you play.
And I had like a really good power that allowed me to all my books were like wild cards, and so that gave me a lot of flexibility. I had a lot of strength.
That's awesome power.
Yeah,
this one resource is wild for the rest of the game.
I was in the plinth zone. Okay, I was just like I was plinthing it up in that game. I had plinths everywhere, and I was just everything was working so well. I was doing this, I was doing that. I hit this here, pulled that back there. Explosions everywhere, fireworks. It was amazing. I was like, oh my god, oh, this is like orgasmic. It was so fun, and everything was working great. This game, I did a harder asymmetric power that it was just like it was a little harder to get it out there. I don't know why, because it pertained to having the right terrains that were up, and if they were just nothing worked for me the second gameplay. I was in the mud and there was no plinth fireworks going off. I was just sludging through, and I was just like it was hard. It was a hard playthrough.
But at the end of the day, like mine was, I can put these things down and they give me a discount to build.
Yeah, I had
there.
That. That was basically what I had,
right.
too.
And
maybe you would have been better off playing
one where
you
could fly his bird out to a different place, get a few resources, and then he can build based on that location. They're not, when I think asymmetric powers,
you think Marco Polo.
I think Marco Polo, yeah, I think Dune, I think things that have really
felt really big to me.
I don't know.
But again, like you said, the bird may be different.
Right. I don't know. Mine felt, I mean, I was able to score lakes twice, which was massive for me.
And then
a whole lake game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then even though Ricky I did feel up. Like with future plays, it was less heads down, it's still a pretty heads down game. There's still so much going on your own personal board that you're not, that
I didn't really care what y'all were doing. Yeah. Other than you were exploring new tiles that I could then fly to.
Sure.
I was very aware of what others were doing. Because I don't know. I feel like this is a very competitive game. I feel like this could be a game played highly competitively. I feel like there's very little hidden information. It's not hard to suss out what other people are going for on their cards.
I mean, all the tiles are hidden information, though.
Right, but they're not that. I don't know. They're not that varied. If there's a lake or if there's a town.
Yeah, you don't want
there. They actually, but it doesn't feel punishing necessarily. Although I definitely had a moment where I turned one over and I was like, oh, damn it. But I wasn't like table flipping or anything. I was like, oh well, gotta figure something else out. But
I feel like this is a game where my skill level could rise a lot with every game if I played it a lot.
I mean, I don't care as much about table down stuff. I think doing those stringing those combos together is really fun. But I will say, my first game was just one on one with Matt, and I had a blast playing it. I said last week, I felt like everything I did was fun. I was also much more tuned into what he was doing, and there was a good back and forth, and it was really cool.
So maybe 3 is the sweet spot for you.
Maybe, because honestly, I felt like with 4, this gameplay, it felt tedious to me. I have to say I was shocked at how much less fun I had the second time around. Given that there were so many fun things that I could be doing, I found that the downtime was kind of terrible.
Oh, wow.
I felt like I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And then it was one of those
sometimes you wait and you're just like, and now I just take my cards back.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like a lot of times I'll be waiting and then I'd finally do something. And it was like I had to do some incremental things just to do. I wasn't getting my big explosions,
right?
Which is fine. You know, you're not every game's gonna be like, you're not gonna be hitting huge home runs every game. But I felt like I was waiting so long to do certain sort of small things, and I had to wait a long time again.
Yeah, that's a shitty
feeling. And it was not a nice feeling. Yeah, it wasn't.
Well, let's recognize we also played this immediately after Tulum because we wanted to fit in 2 games. So we rushed into the second play. We ate substandard sandwiches. So there was a... Inside joke.
The joke explains itself. I mean, I like the sandwiches personally, by the way.
They
best,
were
best sandwiches in LA.
They were not.
Best sandwiches
in LA. They were just fine.
They were good. They were solid sandwiches. Well,
what did you say, Matt?
Whatever.
I don't know, but I don't think those things had anything to do with it. Okay. Honestly. I think
for me, definitely coming after Tulum,
it was a tough act to follow.
Yeah, it was. That's me speaking. I'm not speaking for anybody else.
I think it should have actually been like I think it would have been like setting this. You could also say Tulum set the stage for just like more fun. Yeah. And I just found I was getting a little bored the second time around.
I had a totally different experience. I honestly had more fun even the second time. And wow. I had a great time playing with you.
I'm jealous of you.
Yeah. I mean, I was buzzing the whole game. Like I couldn't wait. I even said like, I could not wait for it to be my turn. I was so excited to do things. And I felt like I was, formulating a plan the entire game that I was able to then pull off. And I knew I was doing well. And I knew who I was potentially losing to throughout the whole game as well. Mm. And I felt like I was in a direct competition with Trey in order to try to like get these certain points. Yeah. And I was excited as we got to the end. I was like, oh, it's going to be close. I might be able to edge him out or not. And like, I actually felt like really aware of what I was doing and how I was doing. And I felt like I was playing. I felt like I had a plan and I was able to do it. And when it was my turn, I was excited to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was totally buzzing.
I felt good.
And that experience actually that like this might be not be a game that has legs in terms of it, after its 10th game, it might be like the fun wears off.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
But yeah. I will say that the moment to moment playing of this game for me does remind me of Ark Nova in the sense that like my turns feel fucking fun to me.
This game is a little unique. It is different than other games. It's not radically different in any one way, but you put all together all the design decisions, and it plays. It's its own experience, and it is kind of different. And people
not long. Four players with a teach 2 hours.
Which actually, by the way, like an issue I have with both games, and this could be a Ben issue, not a game issue, was in both my games, I found that I was like setting myself up. You have these gold cards that say you'll get this many points for doing these achievements. And I found like what I was doing was setting myself up to have this like windfall of points and the game ends. The first game was okay because I still won. I had everything. Everything was, even though I didn't set all that, even though I wasn't able to like activate that thing that I was building towards, since I was firing all cylinders, it was all right. But this game, I felt like I was building for a long game, and then the game just ends. So it's like okay, I have to adjust my expectations.
I reached the end
a little bit,
by the way. Yeah,
And also, by the way, another thing
as you should have, you needed to.
But another thing with this game is, as you get in-game points, you hit bonuses, and you feed those bonuses right back into your system. And so for me, since I was doing this long game thing, I was not getting my in-game points, and I was like, okay, well, I'll get those in-game points because then I'm gonna start. Then I'll start like building my momentum. And the final score of that game, Trey, you had like 100 and 710 points. You guys both had somewhere around like 75 points. I had 35 points. So yeah. This is not me like sour grapes. Like, oh, I came in last. It's more just like, the long game I was planning for
never materialized.
Never materials, which maybe that's on me as a player to adjust expectations.
That spread really does tell you something, because I think the game is a steamroller, it's a high tempo game. Things started to click, and like I was doing some crazy turn. I was annoyed with myself. Like you were saying, you have a good time on your turn. Like I was doing all this stuff. And I was like, this is silly. All the different like I was able to reset and get a final turn. I'm playing like six different. Electric actions or something like that. It's like, this is crazy, all the stuff I'm doing, but like it is a steamroller and you never got the momentum.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm collecting two gears. But then the flip side was, I was like that with you when we played that, Matt. I had crazy end game points, so I got lots of stuff that I fed into it, and I had lots of, I was going up, I went up all my tracks and everything.
I felt bad for other people. It's like, this turn's taking me forever, but I'm doing like 20 different things.
So game 1, 2, and 3 for me were not so good, better, right? I was like liking it more and more. And then the fourth play, I was starting to feel like, oh, it's feeling very samey to me. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to switch it up, and I'm going to look at let's explore the space and make sure we understand the game entirely. I'm going to start trying to score things that I wasn't scoring before, like those beakers, those science symbols and stuff like that. Let's see if I can make the science symbols work. Couldn't make it work. Tried it again today. Couldn't make it work.
I made it work like crazy.
I made it work last game.
I got 28 points off of it at the end of the game.
28 points?
How? Well, because I scored the corner thing, which was 10 for my lightning bolts and my things, and I got 18 off of them just for my three crystals.
It's also, by the way, another thing that's worth noting.
My three alien heads.
Oh, got it.
So I scored it four times, plus the corner thing that scored them again.
Wait, things got really nerdy there. That is the kind of game, though. It's like, I scored my lightning bolts and my blue crystals.
Is my boyfriend about to walk in?
Yeah.
But I another thing is, which was something I guess that you talked about with Teletum, was a lot of times I was in the beginning, I was sort of looking at like some of the things from the central area that I could maybe get, like some of the plinths and some of the other bonus things. And I'd look, be like, oh, I'm gonna get that. And by the time it got to me, they were all gone. So it's like with a two player game, I think you have a reasonable amount of control over expectations of what additions to your game that you can acquire, but with four players, there's just more things getting grabbed up, which is the nature of games.
Chaos. Yes,
but like it's one of those things you're like, okay, I'll have to wait for my turn and see.
Yeah, I think from my point, I think what I'm saying is that I was trying to explore the space because I didn't want to play the same optimal game that had been working so well for me because it did start to feel a little samey to me.
That's why you didn't win, because you're exploring the space.
Oh yeah, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
So
no, what I'm saying is what Matt was saying is that this might not be a game that you want to play like 100 times.
But like, who's for me, play a game 100 times? Yes.
For me, because Elder. I want to have a lot of interaction with players, and this has less of that for me. This is not a game that I'm going to be playing a ton more times. That said, as a medium weight game that has a lot going on and has a lot of interesting elements and is put together in a different way, I've introduced this game now to 8 different people, something like that, 9 different people. And I would say 2/3 of them liked it. 2/3 of them liked it quite a bit.
Fun. It's a fun game still.
Yeah.
I've played it twice. I will say that this is the most fun I've had playing a game all year. Oh. And I also have no idea. It could totally be one of those games where after 6-7 plays of it, the fun wears off.
Sure.
I don't know yet. But right now I can say that the most fun turn-to-turn moments I've had playing a board game this year are that. Now,
I had no idea because I never looked up from my board. That's amazing.
Oh, exactly. There you go. But that's the difference between you and I. Like, that's not necessarily a downside for me at all. Like, yeah. I enjoy that as long as I feel like I'm fully involved and in the zone, which I felt like I was with.
And a lot of people are like that. That's 100% legit.
Yeah. Trey? Yeah.
I think this is not a great fit for me. I think a lot of it was just like, it just felt like too much.
Yeah.
Not necessarily overly complex, but like there was just a lot, and I felt like lost at the beginning. And then I think the other thing that you identified is like how much of it is on your own board and what I like. And that is, this has a lot of that. And so it's not exactly what I love. I would much rather have the balance be more in the Audubon space where, and I think there is a central map here. Like the central, I just didn't feel like it mattered. And I wasn't interacting with it the same way to the degree I was in Audubon or Teletum. So like not a great fit. And given the choices that we have right now, like I don't feel like I need to give it another chance anytime soon. I've got many more games that I want to play before I'm circling back, and I have a feeling it'll be gone. It'll be Santa Maria all over again.
It is Essence season, so we've got a lot of things to play, for sure.
Well, we have coming up games that we still have yet to review, talk about, play Woodcraft. We've got Adewa, the new Uwe Rosenberg game.
Yep.
I ordered Hamlet, which I'm excited about.
Oh, yeah.
We have Federation,
which I haven't played yet.
We've got Weather Machine.
You guys have to play Audubon.
This is Essen. This is Sparta. This is life.
this is Christmas come early.
This is a great time of the year. Yeah.
It's the best time of the year to be a board gamer. It was a pleasure spending the day with you guys. I hope we can game on Tuesday. I'm hoping for that.
Yeah.
And we will. I want to play Teletum again. That's what I want to get.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
And Audubon.
Heck yeah.
I'm in.
Tom, hit me with some music.
You got it.
You've been listening to Game Bane. You've been listening to Game Brain, produced and edited by Matthew Robinson, Tom Donnelly, Trey Alsop, and Ben Mandelkor. Special thanks to Daedalus for our incredible music. More on Daedalus at GameBrainPod.com. You can reach us by email at contact@GameBrainPod.com. Don't forget to join our Discord and our Facebook group. Thanks for listening, and go play some games with friends, or go make some friends with games.